Hello, Four Sober Chicks podcast listeners. We are Heather, Meredith, Dana, and Tracy, four women recovering out loud. We gather here from around the world to discuss all things related to alcohol addiction, sobriety, and various paths to recovery. We get real about the highs, the lows, and the amazing reality of living a sober life. This podcast is a creative collaboration by women, for women, and for anyone who supports women.
Hello, everybody. Tracy here from Four Sober Chicks, and I'm so excited today about our guest. But first, I'm here with Heather, Meredith, and Dana, and we are here with Joey Bachrach. So Joey Bachrach and Andrew Fox are living testaments to recovery's transformative power. As husbands and advocates, they understand firsthand the importance of a supportive community in the healing process. Inspired by their experiences, they established Rainbow Hill Sober Living, a dedicated sober living community for LGBTQ men. It has been a beacon of hope for countless individuals seeking a nurturing and affirming environment. Joey and Andrew are proud members of the LGBTQ community and have achieved their sobriety in their own lives. Their passion and commitment shine through in every aspect of their program, creating a supportive and inclusive environment where you can thrive. Joey, welcome.
Thank you. It's an absolute honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to be here with you. As we were talking before the podcast, you know, I have watched you grow into the sober, amazing man that you are. On Sexy is Sober, love is love. So I'm so thrilled. We all are to have you here today to listen to your story and to see what you're doing now. So with that, I'm going to let you go ahead and, you know, just tell us a little bit about you and your story with sobriety.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm Joey Bachrach, and I am a grateful alcoholic, but I wasn't as happy of being exactly who I was until I got sober this go around. But my journey started back in 2013 when I was in a sober living and a treatment center. But the only difference in that is that it wasn't my time to getting sober. And for anyone who's familiar with that, it really needs to be done for yourself. So it wasn't my time. I did the 60 days. I kept my head down. And then the day that I got out, I relapsed. And I was out for about 6 years after that. So it wasn't pretty. But where I think the catalyst of where my drinking really took off was when my father passed away when I was 17 years old from Lou Gehrig's disease. And it was a downward spiral from there. And for the longest time, I blamed myself for his passing, even though now looking back and having a lot of therapy, that it was completely out of my control. And what I did the night that he passed away was I told my parents that I was going to a friend's house for a sleepover, when in fact, I went out to a gay club. And my mother back then was very persistent and I thought controlling, and I kept sending the phone to voicemail, when in fact she was actually calling me that my father was not responding. But I didn't find out until the following morning. And then the day after that he passed away, I moved back out of the house, and that's what really started my downward spiral. So I'm talking about bottles and bottles and bottles of vodka and tequila. And I didn't see it as an issue or a problem for a couple of years. I was in and out of a pretty toxic relationship at the time. I didn't understand that I was an alcoholic until much later. I didn't really start admitting to myself that I had a problem until I was about 20. So that's 3 years of heavy drinking, thinking, you know, I'm just a teenager. I'm going through my own stuff. I don't have a problem. How could somebody like me have a drinking problem? Like, that's just not in my cards. But that was very clouded judgment. And how I was introduced into the recovery movement, I guess, when it wasn't my time, was a different person that I was dating, and my mother went behind my back, and I thought I was going on a vacation for a month with my dog and my boyfriend at the time. No, I got dropped off at a sober living, And I was told that I was going to be staying there until I get my act together. Told that boyfriend I absolutely hated him. I said some very vulgar things towards my mother that I regret ever saying. But I will say that it did teach me it was my first introduction to AA. And at first I thought it was a little too gaudy for me or spiritual for my liking. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. And I had my own history with not being super religious. I grew up in a conservative Jewish family. I went to a Jewish day school and I didn't have a good experience at that school. So I connected the two and I was like, how's this going to work? My father passed away. And then they said, well, you know, it could just be anything, like a doorknob. It could be anything that you feel like would be your higher power. So for the longest time, it was a doorknob. And I learned a lot in AA, although short 60 days, I learned a lot in that treatment center. I had a great time, but it wasn't my time. So day 60, relapsed, went out. And that was the first time that I actually felt like an impending doom, which is extremely bizarre. And I was like, what is going on with me? I don't understand why I feel guilty or ashamed or bad for drinking. So that kept me out for 6 years. and then I got sober again, and it was New Year's. Well, technically it was January 1st. I was a newbie in 2016, and I had a sponsor. I did the steps. I actually did them. I completed them, and I was building my life back up, and I was doing really well. But I told myself the lie. So I had 15 months of sobriety. And this was the first time I actually counted being sober. My first stint in 2013 didn't count it. But 2016, I was doing it for me. I wanted to be sober. I loved how my life was going. And then I told myself the lie that that I was drinking again after 15 months of sobriety because of the anniversary of my father's passing. So I waited until May 29th of 2017 to start drinking again. And I was out for 7 months and I nearly burned everything down to the ground. Took months of therapy. But what happened was, is I realized that it wasn't because of my father's passing. It was because I had made the decision that I wanted to start drinking again. And I told myself the lie that I was cured. I wasn't an alcoholic. I have my life back together. I built this amazing, like I have everything. Like how can it still affect me? And, relapse, I've been very transparent about that with my journey to our followers through Rainbow Hill Sober Living and through our IOP program, but it's not a part of everyone's story and it shouldn't be idolized that's my main message as far as relapse is that it happens. It doesn't happen to everybody and it shouldn't be glorified, but we do understand that for me personally, I am grateful to that relapse, although it sounds crazy to say out loud, because it made me realize that, you know what, I am somebody who can never drink again, and that's totally fine. I went out, I thought I was different. Nope. I was playing with fire, and I'm glad that I did, but I do not recommend it at all. and now I'm able to relate with our residents at Rainbow Hill Sober Living and our clients here at Rainbow Hill Recovery. So that's what it was like. And now I just celebrated my 6 year sober birthday last Wednesday, so November 22nd. And I am shocked, but at the same time, I've earned it. And I know that everything that I've built is because of the love and support of my husband, Andrew, and my family and my closest friends. And we now get to be there for our clients, which is like mind-boggling. So back in 2021, Andrew and I, we left our real estate careers and we had an extra house in my mother's house, essentially. So we proposed an idea to her if we could start a sober living, but specifically for LGBT men. She at one time was using it as an Airbnb. So we said, would you be our landlord and let us do this? And so we invested everything that we had and we put it all on red. We kept our fingers crossed and we hoped it sticked, and it did. And since then, we've helped countless individuals, primarily LGBT men and non-binary individuals, and we've become like the unofficial trans men house. But since I would say 2 months ago now, we did start opening our door to trans women specifically, because there are very few limited options for trans women in general. And we just wanted to create a healthy, happy environment and home for them. So I'm really excited about that. And then June of this year, so June of 2023, we opened Rainbow Hill Recovery. And Rainbow Hill Recovery is an IOP program. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with an IOP, it means intensive outpatient program. It's a treatment center. And we help everybody who is part of the LGBTQ community. So if you are gay, bi, trans, non-binary, questioning, intersex, you have a place to call home here. And we're extremely thankful and happy that we exist. So that sums up a lot of what we do. I mean, we offer so more. So yeah, thank you.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. Wow. Ah. So, you know, my story, a lot of the points that you hit kind of resonate with me. My drinking changed when my dad passed away as well. A lot of things happened that year. It was 2010, but that's when my drinking changed from just a party kind of thing on the weekends to actually using alcohol to numb, escape. And it sounds like, you know, we share that in common as well. You know, another thing that I really like about your story and what you're mentioning is the relapse. It's not something that, you know, we want to glorify, and especially when we do it ourselves. But the first time I got sober, I did it alone. I didn't admit I was an alcoholic. I just abused alcohol. And then when I was like, you know, in a really good shape in my life and where I wanted to be, I started to drink again. Similar to you, 8 months into my new drinking again, I was worse than I was when I stopped drinking the first time. And now I know that I'm an alcoholic, and I still have to remind myself when my mind wants to tell me, oh, you can drink, you know, you can drink, you just have one glass of champagne. And I just have to think about what happened before. Another reason I think during that relapse for me was I knew what sobriety gave me. So I was almost sober for 2 years, and I felt, I mean, the first, it was a struggle, absolutely. But then the empowerment that came from it and all the good and wonderful things and how strong and healthy I felt, that was something that I could remember after, you know, I drank again and then I wanted to become sober. So there are, you know, and in the communities that we're in, as far as the drinking ones, you know, the people, it's unconditional love. You know, you can go out and you can do it again. That's okay. But you can come back when you're ready. So that's just a beautiful thing to me. And that's what also attracts me to AA, because that's what I, you know, that was the program that I use to help me stay sober. So Joey, tell me, I'm all about like the entrepreneurship part of this. And I want to know, how do you open a sober living home? Because I mean, just how do you do that?
Yeah, so there isn't a guidebook or toolbox, so to speak, when opening a sober living. Let me just say that and make that very clear.
Interesting.
Yes, there's no toolbook. But we are currently still part of a coalition called the Sober Housing Network, which is a nonprofit, and their sole purpose is to guide individuals or couples or people in general who are looking to open a sober living for the right reasons. I can spend hours talking to all of you about the shade and the darkness and the dark side of sober living and of treatment. And Andrew and I have become like the go-to couple now when people are looking to open up a sober living. We ask the important questions. Why do you want to be opening a sober living? What are your motives? Are you even sober yourself? The amount of people who have come to us from our real estate days who aren't sober, think of it as a cash cow, asking us, what can we do to open a house? And I'm like, absolutely not. Block, delete. I have no use for you in my life. So it's extremely important. Your heart has to be in the right space. If you own a house, fantastic. Because if you are looking to lease, you will get pushback from landlords essentially thinking, oh, well, I don't want people actively using, you're going to have people smoking outside of the front. There's a bad stigma. There's stigma still to this day as what sober livings are. They are probably going to be the cleanest houses on the block, the quietest neighbors. We don't throw parties. So we build community. They help out. They help take other neighbors' trash cans out. Like, they are good people. We all are. And I think what's important is finding a landlord who understands exactly what your mission is. And if you own your property, great. The thing that a lot of people don't realize, though, is that we are not regulated and we do not require a state license. So as far as capacity goes, obviously you have to make sure that you are able to comfortably, and I'm not talking about packing people in like sardines. There are homes that we've heard of from clients of ours who are residents of ours now come from other homes where they had five people to a room. They had porta potties in the driveways as like bathrooms. Like, what are you doing? So there are those flop houses, but as long as you have the space and you're able to comfortably fit residents, you have enough bathrooms, you have enough refrigerators, and you're doing it for the right reasons, you're able to fill your house out. And the reason that there aren't regulations or state license requirements is because at the end of the day, a sober living is a home for individuals who are all recovering from any substance, living as a family unit. That is the key point right there, is that they're living as a family unit. We're just not blood related. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Just real quick, how many men do you have in your sober living home?
So with our home, we currently have 9 men and we have 1 trans woman. And we have 3 openings. And our home does it a little differently on who gets to live at the house. So everyone who calls, they either have the privilege to speak with myself or my husband, my better half. And we always say we may be one of the owners, but ultimately it is entirely up to the residents. So we do the pre-assessments, we see if they'll be a good fit. And then from there, we introduce them to the house. If they're local, they come to the house either on a Tuesday meeting that we have at the house at 7:30 p.m., or they do it after their other house meeting on Sundays at 11 a.m. And that way it's like a fun interview, fun audition, call it what you will. And they'll be asked personal questions like, what's your drug of choice? How many days sober do you have? What's your zodiac sign? And I think one of the most more recent questions is, do you prefer Cardi B or Nicki Minaj? So they ask very crazy questions, but they're good questions. And they then submit their votes to us individually. And then from there, if that individual has at least the majority, then I let them know the good news or the bad news. And if they don't get voted into the house, we do provide them with a list of LGBT affirming sober living. So any place that we refer out to, Andrew and I physically, personally vetted all of these programs and these homes.
Amazing. So do you have a wait list?
We do currently have a wait list, which is amazing, but yes. Also... It's not a bad thing to have, but it's also unfortunate because a lot of the people who are on the wait list that have been voted in, we want them to find other homes, you know, so we provide them the list, but they're like, I don't want to live there. I want to live at Rainbow Hill. And we only have 1 home currently. So
I know. And you need more because your Instagram and your home is beautiful.
It's an
inspiring space that is bright and positive, and I just love it. You've put your personality, your heart into it, and it really rings out and speaks it. So
Andrew did a majority of the painting. So everything that you see in the house has been hand painted by Andrew. I helped out a little bit. All the beds have been built, everything we did, and it came with a lot of love.
That's amazing. So to kind of go back into your story, I think for me, stories are absolutely everything. It does not matter who we are, where we come from, the baggage that we hold. There's so many things that can be interweaved into anyone's story that's sober. The lies that we tell ourselves, I think, is a big one for me. I would in the back of my mind, the amount of times where I was like, oh, maybe I should keep my drinking in check. And then I would prove to myself that I could not drink for a week. But then there would be that one thing of being like, oh, I had this Christmas party to go to, perfect timing. Like the lies literally became my life. And it was so bad because once you yourself as the addict become to knowing these lies as complete truth, undoing all that and unpacking all of that has been probably one of the biggest parts of my journey of it. It seeps into every other part of my life, you know? So when I'm raising my three kids, the lies again that I tell myself, it's all rooted in my drinking. And it's just amazing to me that at the end of the day, we're doing it to ourselves. You know, it's not, yes, you know, your dad passing. And unfortunately, my mom passed literally almost a year to the day after I quit drinking, which that was a big, big one for me because she was a hardcore addict. Really, honestly, that was practically her demise. But at the end of the day, having that year under my belt, I think saved my life because it could have been the complete opposite for me. And that could have been a lie that I could have told myself. But turning your pain into such a passion, that's what I love to see. I mean, that's why the four of us are here, is we all have a pain story that we're trying to put into such a passionate thing because we want so many people to understand that they are not alone, because at the end of the day, addiction does not discriminate at all. And it is so important for people to hear people's stories and the lies and the turning pain into passion. Like all of the things create this package that ultimately create this life that people are completely looking for. They just either don't know it yet. Just like you said, you know, it wasn't your time. I don't even know if I could count how many times wasn't my time. And those were all relapses, you know, for me in my story. But at the end of the day, I cannot give you enough praise for what you guys are doing, the impact that you're having, not only on a local level, but nationally. I think that it's absolutely huge for what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You guys are gonna make me cry. Oh, so it's really sweet. I'm kind of speechless, honestly.
Heather, did you? Well, then I'll help you out. Yeah, I'll help you out then a little bit. So the part of your story that really touches my heart is the connection with the LGBTQ community. So my father was a gay man. He came out when I was 5. And addiction was a very big part of his life. I would suppose from living closeted and at the time where he was and what was happening and living in Utah. So, you know, all of those things don't really make for a very open environment. And his addiction led to a wild lifestyle, which led to, you know, contraction of AIDS and eventually his passing. And this was at the late 80s, early 90s. And I, as his daughter, I saw what our country was doing in terms of disregarding this population of people because of their sexuality, essentially. That's what, in my opinion, that the treatment was not, and people were not taken care of. So I'd like to talk or give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about, you know, as a sober living for specifically LGBTQ community, for the transgender, like you're saying that there's not a lot of places for someone who is transgender to come and get treatment. What are you seeing in terms of, this is also an epidemic, just like AIDS was, right? Addiction is. And we're seeing another part of the population that's marginalized and not getting services because of their sexuality. So I'd love you to speak to that and even talk about what's changing.
Yeah, so the sole reason why we opened Rainbow Hill Sober Living was because there weren't any LGBT specific homes, and the ones that were LGBT friendly or gay friendly that they had plastered all over their websites weren't actually friendly. They weren't affirming. They were just, you know, slapping a gay flag on their site saying that they accept gay people. That's not how anyone should, you know, feel like they need to go to that house because they have, you know, that plastered all over their website. And so when we opened, we got a lot of calls, and a majority of our first group of residents came from other homes or came from out of state, primarily because the homes that they were previously at that were quote unquote friendly were anything but. So they were intentionally misgendered. They were called homophobic slurs, and they were called things that no person should ever be, like, they just, it's not an environment that anybody should live in. Whether or not they're queer, doesn't matter. No one should be spoken to that way. So when they moved in, I got calls from other sober living home owners, very, very upset, because all they saw were dollar signs. And I said, at the end of the day, we don't answer to anybody. Andrew and I opened our home for a reason. And if you have a problem with how we're operating, that is entirely your thing. You should probably talk to your therapist, but you need to look at yourself in the mirror, because if we're having clients coming from your home saying that this is what's going on, something clearly needs to change. And it was so bad that one of our clients, they're non-binary, left this house for being intentionally misgendered, but also called those derogatory terms. And then that sober living owner called them and their parents and said that they're going to probably relapse and die within the year. That resident has now close to 2 years of sobriety, thrived at our home. Yes, they were a little hard-headed when they moved in, but aren't we all? So if you're going to work with the population, whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's women, whether it's men, whether it's non-binary, you need to treat them like family. And the sole reason, so that's one of the reasons why we opened. But also, Andrew and I are doing it by ourselves. So we don't have any outside investors. We don't have any partners. It's just the two of us. That's it. So we don't have bottom lines. We work on sliding scales. We scholarship residents. I mean, we even do the same thing at our program. So it's really nice. And it's nothing makes my blood like as passionate, but also as mad, knowing that there's still going to be programs like that today. So I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah. And I think it's all, you know, accurate, right? We do this with women because women are also a marginalized population. And I am a very much a 12-stepper. It saved my life, but it's also excludes women to some degree. You don't see your voice as much in it. So in what you're doing, what do you think is another way forward? You know, like what is, there's no guidebook for this, but what would you say to someone who is really looking to be inclusive? And how do you create an environment that is gender affirming and is positive?
Ask questions. When somebody moves into your home, ask them what their pronouns are. You can't assume. And ask them what makes them comfortable. Make sure that they understand that they are being heard. And if that there's a problem, know that you're never intentionally saying something that would upset someone. So it's if somebody who accidentally says he instead of she to somebody who hasn't started transitioning, it should always come with a place of understanding. And it's like, it's not intentional. That I think is the first step. So it's just making sure that your clients are heard, ask questions. If you don't know, there are homes now like ours that are affirming. So contact those homes. We've had countless homes reach out to us, ask us to come by and go through, you know, just a general idea of what we do and how we operate. So they can be affirming, because saying friendly is just like, that's so old. Don't use it anymore. You know, that doesn't mean anything.
Love that. Thank you.
I was going to just jump in. I don't really have any questions because you've talked about so much and I'm processing so much in my head. I just had a panel discussion last week at my company where we have a lot of employee resource groups, and one of them is open. So it's Oracle Pride Employee Network. And I have a group called Oracle Alliance for Recovery. And we collaborated with a panel of Oracle Health people and talked to both groups. And I'm just extremely excited to introduce you and your Instagram and all of that to the folks that were on the call. We had over 300 people on the call. We have over thousands of people in the network. So it warms my heart to know that there's places like that out there for people who desperately need it and desperately need that safe space. We have a lot of trans folks here at Oracle. We have a lot of LGBT folks, and you know, they continue to look for the safe spaces within our company as well. And I'm happy to be one of those places that provides that. And I'm always looking for folks like you that you know, have the passion and the purpose and the heart for folks to really get into recovery and find a new life. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you. I'm honored.
Joey, I have a question because I heard you say something and I'm just totally like, what? You said you don't have any investors or like sponsors. Okay.
No.
What is your plan to change that? I mean,
it's a good question. It's a question we get asked a lot. We want to keep it within our family because when the history of programs, when they do have outside investors, money starts to speak louder than their mission. And Andrew and I, we are comfortable. We don't need to do that. We used money that we were going to use to purchase a second home. We fell out of escrow twice, no fault of our own. And we're like, what should we do? So it essentially just jump-started our plan, which was to always open a treatment center. So that's where we were able to get the funds to open Rainbow Hill Recovery. And yeah, it's a very questionable thing when it comes, when you involve other people and then the mission gets lost and then there are too many chefs in the kitchen. And I think what makes Rainbow Hill Rainbow Hill is because of the Andrew and I are so in sync. We have the same heart. We have the same passion. And essentially, we are the secret sauce. There are other homes and programs that are trying to do very similar things, but they're not being executed right. But I think the main reason for that is because they see dollar signs and not individuals. And I might get in trouble for saying that out loud, but I've been pretty vocal about that anyway, so it's okay.
Well, people turn it into a business. That's what they're doing. And that's the number one. If we can hit these numbers and this amount of money, people get lost in the shuffle when that happens.
Yeah. And our pricing at both the house and at our IOP are affordable, as they should be. So, and our goal, we just got our DHCS certification. We've had joint commission since June. So we're nationally recognized and have that, which is cool. But in 8 months, we should have HMO, so in-network contracts, essentially. So we are affordable. That is the key. And if anyone who understands business, it's about longevity. So if you're affordable, you're going to do a lot better than if you're charging up the wazoo and people can't afford you. Like, it's just it's a no-brainer from the business perspective. If you're affordable, then you're going to last a long time. Duh. Sorry.
Yeah. No. But I just see, you know, when I asked you that, I didn't like you, I don't see the money, right? I see all the people and the potential that you have to help and to create a safe place for to recover. And I love that you are content where you all are at. I think you are growing though, because it went from sober living, just, you know, the Hill House to Rainbow Recovery. So, you know, and you're following your heart and what will feel right, you know, you'll do, and what you don't, You don't. And that's really awesome.
Well, I do have something to share that I haven't spoken about at all. and it will be, it's going to come out in the new year, which is exciting, but a passion project that I have been working on since 2021, but it's always been an idea of mine, but I have my 501c3 status. It's called Big Little Bows, and Big Little Bows is a nonprofit for members of our community, specifically for 15 to 17 year olds who are currently in recovery, to be mentored by people who have at least 3 or more years of sobriety under their belt. So we'll have gay men mentoring gay teens, we'll have lesbians mentoring lesbian teens, trans men and women mentoring trans youth, non-binary individuals mentoring non-binary teens. And it's going to help so many people. And because it is a 501c3 and it is for the public, people are able to donate and people are able to write it off at the end of the year because everyone says, what can I do to help? And the funds that we're able to raise from Big Little Bows will help individuals get into sober livings and to help pay for treatments specifically for the LGBT community. Because for those of it's a lot of people think that sober livings are able to take insurance. The answer is no. And the reason for that is because they do not provide treatment. And there are homes that do that and they should be shut down. But sober livings are always out of pocket. So nobody should be denied the opportunity to live in a really good home, a home that is affirming, a home that is safe, and a home that makes you feel like you belong. And finances shouldn't be an issue and interfere with that. Same thing with treatment. Not everybody has access to those platinum PPO plans. It's like we need to help out some way. So this is something that I've been working on for a very long time, and I'm excited for it to go. So
well, thank you for announcing it here. I'm so excited as well. And Big Little Bows, I like that.
Amazing. Yes. So as we come tight, I just wanted to ask you, as we kind of come to the end of our time, what out of all of this amazingness that you're doing, what is, and maybe it's Big Little Bows, what are you most proud of? What makes you the happiest?
What makes me the happiest is I get to do this all with Andrew. That is probably, if it wasn't for Andrew, I mean, I don't even know where I would be, but Rainbow Hill would not exist. And if we weren't the team that we are today, like we wouldn't have any of this. Nobody would, we wouldn't exist, plain and simple. So Andrew, my husband, hands down.
And I'm assuming he's sober as well. So
yes, he has 13 years under his belt.
It's amazing. The power of a sober couple. Thank
the
you.
Sober gays.
Yes, sober gays. Yay.
Well, Joey, just thank you again. I'm so happy to have met you virtually, outside of Instagram, to hear your voice and your message and to see all the beautiful things and the love that you're sharing and that you're giving. So, just thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And, at this time, I mean, please tell our audience where they can find you.
Yes, you can find us at Rainbow Hill Sober Living and at Rainbow Hill Recovery and at Big Little Bow, no S after the end. Somebody already took that handle, so.
All right. And everyone else, you can find the Four Sober Chicks here on Instagram, Facebook, and then also check out our link tree to all of the podcasts where you can listen to us. So thank you all for being here and with our special guests again, Joey. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate you and wish you the best on your sober adventures. For more information and details on upcoming episodes, check us out on YouTube or Instagram at Four Sober Chicks. That's number 4 Sober Chicks. We welcome your feedback and look forward to being with you on the next episode.